Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell. Guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters, your source for all things business. My name is Adam Torres. You can follow me on Instagram at AskAdamTorres. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Become a Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Roderick Stanley on the line, and he's CEO over at Federoff Corporation, which is a member of the Schuff Group. Roderick, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Adam. Thank you for having me on your show.
All right. So I'm excited to get into today's topic. So, I mean, we have a lot to cover. We're going to talk about, of course, the Federoff Corporation, some of the great things that you're doing abroad. Also want to get into your background. I mean, over 30 years in international business. I mean, you've been all over the place, US, Japan, Germany. I mean, you name it, you've probably been there. So we'll get into that. But maybe just to get us kicked off, I mean, you're definitely the subject matter expert on this one because you're living it and you're working in it day in and day out. I know a lot of, you know, companies, they're going through some interesting times right now, specifically in manufacturing, especially those that are exporting. I mean, it's a lot of uncertainties out there. So maybe let's start the conversation there. What are you seeing?
Well, Adam, let me give a plug to the manufacturing industry and particularly those companies who are exporting here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's been a tough few years. You almost feel a little bit dirty if you admit that you export goods beyond the borders. And mm-hmm. You know, exporting is hugely valuable for the economy. If you imagine the economy as a bucket of water, well, that bucket of water, the GDP, rises and falls depending on productivity and innovation. But when you export, you bring in extra dollars into the US economy and you increase the GDP.
Yeah.
So every dollar you get from abroad is worth an awful lot. Now, I feel in the last 2 years, there's been a lot of negative press about mm-hmm. exporting, as if, oh no, don't export anything to China, and don't be close to Germany or to France or to Europe. But it's hugely positive for the economy. It creates jobs. Mm-hmm. And whilst we're going through a very difficult phase in terms of creating huge deficits at the moment to support companies during the virus, at some stage we're going to have to pay it back. Okay. And who is going to pay it back? It's going to be you and me, Adam. But wouldn't it be great if we can get people in Germany, people in France, people in China to pay for our deficit by buying our goods? So I can't stress how important it is for the economy. But then when I move to individual companies, and we've seen that this in the last 50 years here in Federoff, mm-hmm. Because 50% of our revenue comes from abroad and 50% is the US market. And what's beautiful about that is that you have this balance and flow. As the U.S. economy is down, often the foreign economies in China or in the Middle East is on an up. So you tend to balance your cash flows over the period, and it gives you a lot more stability in your company. And then the other thing what I think is really important about exporting and manufacturing and why we need to have our government to support us in this area is because it really helps you to light up your own innovation back here in the US. You travel to Russia, you travel to China, you get ideas, you see new ways of doing the same thing with different processes in the chemical industry, for example. And that brings even greater productivity back. So we really should be, cheering at this fantastic opportunity. We should be pushing it ahead. I know the new administration seems to be a little bit more positive in that direction, but there's so much more to be done. We have to support our exporters, like the German industry supports their exports. Mm-hmm. They have special industry support for companies. They have special financing for exporting mm-hmm. and so on. And there's nothing wrong with taking some help from the government. We're not asking for free money. But we're asking to be able to put on the same level playing field as our competitors because of all the good reasons that, you know, the economy will get out of it.
Yeah.
So I really want to shout out loud, proud to be an exporter and a manufacturer in the US. Our products are wanted abroad. Let's all get together, create new jobs and increase our GDP in the economy.
That's a great point. And as you're saying that, I'm reminded. So, I mean, I've done a lot of interviews and I've worked with a lot of some manufacturers in the Midwest and otherwise that have, you know, at first they like one, for example, that comes to mind was a ball bearing company of all things. Yes. So high pressure, like ball bearings. And before this gentleman purchased the company, like 80% of their business was done domestically. And this is a, you know, 40-year-old company in the Midwest. Nothing you would think, you know, very glamorous about ball bearings. Well, let's see, after they explored international markets within 5 years, 80% was of their sales was coming from, or revenue was coming from international. So in your experience, obviously you have this tremendous international background, the Schuff Group, German, you know, group, yes. company. So for those, let's just say those manufacturers here that, because some of them will be watching this, just to be clear, that maybe haven't explored international markets. Like what are some that maybe that they may very well, just like my ball bearing example, there may be a market there that they don't know yet. And they're stuck a couple steps behind. What kind of advice would you give them into maybe seeking out opportunities? Because maybe they haven't, and maybe that's their, you know, that's their lifeline at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think the important thing to say is don't be afraid. There are markets out there. Sure, there are some sort of barriers. I mean, you have some linguistic differences. You have cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And I think one just has to move beyond that. And you also have some financial differences. Sometimes you need to finance some of your exporting contracts because payment terms might be longer for 12 months and so on. But we have here in the US, the Ex-Im Bank. Fantastic. They really offer a lot of help in terms of financing your foreign deals. So it protects you that you won't lose any money due to potential risks in foreign countries. There is the Chambers of Commerce. So there is help out there. Yeah. It's just there's not a lot talked about. There's various associations that can help too. For example, like the Valve Manufacturers Association. But I think at the end of the day, do talk to other companies that export, and they will sometimes be able to recommend, for example, if you're going to China, a local agent who you could deal with. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing, Adam, is you go to China mm-hmm. with a very advanced product here from the US mm-hmm. that's 40 or 50% more expensive than an equivalent product in China. Mm-hmm. And we're finding that the Chinese petrochemical companies are buying our product 40% more expensive than buying a local Chinese product. So what we've learned is in these developing economies that people are looking for quality, they're looking for longevity in the product. Mm-hmm. So they have the mindset that we used to have here in the 70s and 80s. The mindset we had here is you spend a little bit more, but you increase your productivity, you increase your efficiency. Mm-hmm. A 0.5% increase in efficiency when you're manufacturing a petrochemicals can mean millions of dollars. Mm. So you just don't buy the cheapest thing. And the nice thing about these foreign markets, whether it's into China, we found into Russia and certainly into Korea, that they want to buy the top quality products that are available. Mm. So you actually can maximize your profits. Yeah. You just have to get over these cultural barriers. And there are many cultural barriers. And it's just an understanding of when I do business in China, or sorry, in Japan, as example, I actually don't have to do much talking when I first meet my first customers. The local agent will introduce you and we'll talk. And your job as the salesperson or the CEO in that meeting is primarily to keep your eyes down, nod respectfully, and you've done a great job. You know, of course, that person, your agent, will have already presented your products because the whole culture in Japan is about nemowashi, which means consensus building. Mm. So by the time you get there as the CEO of the company, your agent will have done the groundwork there. Very different in Germany, for example. You're selling into Germany. The great thing in Germany is nearly all Germans speak English. They love to practice, so don't be embarrassed. And I think if you're meeting with German customers, you have to be very organized, very prepared, know exactly what your key benefits and features are, what your advantages are. and lay it out very carefully, very in a detailed manner. And there are little things. For example, in Germany, it's very uncommon to give large discounts after you've had given the first quotation. If you do that, they feel, oh, why didn't you give it to me at the beginning? You're trying to trick me. Whereas here in the US, you know, you go in with your first opening price, you give a few percent, and then to win the contract, you're given a 5 or 6 or 10%.
Yeah.
That's not something you could really do in Germany, because you go in with your best price up front and you work from there. So there are a huge number of advantages in terms of innovation, in terms of profitability, in terms of expanding your company and creating a secure base for your company. Yes, there are challenges, but they're all challenges that are actually quite a lot of fun. Traveling to these countries, meeting other interesting people who see the world just slightly differently than we do, is to be welcomed, I think. And it's fascinating, and it's interesting, and it's fun.
Wow, I mean, that sounds amazing. It does sound fun. As you're saying this, I haven't done business abroad like you have. I mean, 30 years plus. So that being said, all the different things you're saying, I'm kind of taking notes mentally. I'm like, oh, this does open up a world of possibilities in terms of what can be done. I want to, so you did mention, so we touched on it briefly, and I want to go a little bit further down that line. So first off, maybe, so you're talking about the quality of the valves and the trend and what people are buying abroad. Maybe just to kind of lay the groundwork, let's talk a little bit more about Fedorov Corporation and what makes, and about the group and what makes it so special. Let's start there before we get into products.
Okay, so we're a company based here in Pennsylvania. We've been operating for 50 years. We celebrated our 50th anniversary last year.
Congrats.
And we're very proud. We have a number of inventions, which when I say an invention in an old economy type of company, which the valve industry is, number of inventions that still today are unmatched in the world.
Wow.
We sell mostly into the petrochemical oil gas industry. Our typical customers are people like Chevron, Phillips, Exxon, Reliance Abroad, you know, GE, BASF. And we make very large valves for a petrochemical process. For example, companies that are making Kevlar as an end product, or Lycra, or any polymer, polyester. But we've also sold valves into people making chocolate and or vodka. So, I mean, we are very colorful, but what we specialize in is, well, let me put it this way. There are companies that can produce valves that are specific for high temperature applications. There are other companies that are quite good at doing high pressure applications. And then there are other companies that are good at doing very difficult media, sticky, clumpy, with lots of solid pieces in it. Mm-hmm. And we actually try, or our proposal is that we can do all three of them. Mm-hmm. So we're targeting a very niche market, one that's very specific, where the requirements are very, very difficult. So we actually change our valves designs to meet those requirements. And we did that, for example, in Kevlar. When we were talking with the customer who was making that at the time, basically the very fine strands of Kevlar come out of the process, but unfortunately they were breaking. And the reason they were breaking is that the valve they were going through had a pressure loss, and that pressure loss had an impact on the quality of the fibers. So I'd like to say we just thought of a solution. We didn't. It took us 3 or 4 or 5 months, and we came up with a solution, which I don't really talk a lot about, but it's basically, it effectively makes the valve have zero pressure loss, effectively. Mm. Every engineer will say, well, there's no such thing as real zero, but effectively, you know, zero pressure loss. So that when, as the medium flows through the process, through the pipelines, through our valve into the various parts, it looks to the process as if there's no valve there at all. So that's it. We're a specialist in difficult medium and difficult circumstances. Mm. And just to give you an idea, in petrochemical and the refining industry, I mean, 30, 40 years ago, we were selling, you know, 2, 3, 4-inch valves. And now we're selling 8, 12, 16-inch valves. Mm. And whereas the typical pressure, you know, 15, 20 years ago was 150 pounds, 300 pounds, now it's not uncommon for us to make 1,500 pound and 2,500 pound.
Wow.
So the whole petrochemical industry is really developing. It's getting, the plants are getting bigger. The process is getting more efficient, which means the pressure is going up, the temperature is going up. So which creates a nice niche for us as a company with some very special products.
So Roderick, I want to go a little bit further into your products specifically, because I know, you know, some of the things that you're doing there are special and they're really just unique to Fedorov Corporation. So tell us a little bit more.
Okay, Adam. Yeah, I mean, as I said, we generally spoke about the industries that we're in and applications, and that they're for severe applications in many cases. But basically, our valves fall into three or four different categories. We have what we call bottom outlet valves, diverter valves, spray rinse valves, sampling valves, etc. But what makes them special? And in the industry speak, what we say here, what's really important is obviously is that there's no leakage. And, you know, one of our products called RamSeal, we're so proud we had to make a T-shirt with that. And it's basically, you know, 1x10 to the minus 8 cc per second. And that really is the best in industry right now. And just to give you an idea how much leakage that would be, I mean, you'd be talking about that much, whatever the medium is leaking over a 3-year period.
Wow.
So it's quite exceptional. So from that, that's one part of our valves. We low leakage, low emissions to atmosphere as well. Another part that's important with our valves. Because we do a lot in the polymer industry, you know, whether it's Leica or Kevlar or polyester, what's really important is to have what we call a dead space free valve. And that means basically when the medium flows through the valve, it flows through in the smooth way. It doesn't stop anywhere. There are no crevices or gaps where it can accumulate and grow, which then, of course, would have a bad impact on the medium. So that's dead face free is one of our key things that we do. And for example, we have a very unique valve, which is called a seatless valve. Mm-hmm. I think there may be only one other company in the world who can do that. And basically, this is a valve where when you look down the bore of the valve, it's completely smooth on the inside. And it's very difficult to achieve that. Normally, a valve has a seat, which is a ledge, basically, which where something material can gather. Mm-hmm. So our combination of dead space free, very low leakage, almost zero leakage, we could really say, and the other benefits of our flow and design and dead space free really gives us a portfolio which puts us in the really top quarter of quartile of all, you know, specialist valve manufacturers.
All right, Roderick. So I have to tell you right now, where's my T-shirt? How do I get one? A valve T-shirt? Come on, man. Like, how do I get one of these T-shirts?
I'm going to send you one.
I thought we knew each other here, and you're over here pulling out T-shirts out of nowhere, and I didn't even know I got one. Come on, man. I hurt my feelings over here.
Yeah, you're right. I should have thought of that beforehand, right?
Let's talk more. Let's go further down the line. Talk more about the petrochemical industry in general and trends that you're seeing. You know, not asking you to have that crystal ball, but you do sit in a unique position, right? Multinational company that, you know, in business in the United States, 50 plus years, just celebrate your 50 years. And then, of course, the Schuff Group has their own history also. So let's talk a little bit more about trends and things that you're seeing in petrochemical industry in general.
Okay, so generally speaking, when you're looking at chemical or petrochemical plants, new build, typically there's a 7-year cycle. And the first 2 years, engineering companies are looking at plans, how to lay it out, what processes it'll have, what licenses are required. And then, you know, then you start building a plant, which takes 2 or 3 years. And then you have sort of then an operation for 2 years, and then you start all over again. Mm. So those trends have gone on because we've had a lot of disruption in the last few years, and particularly the pandemic at the moment has disrupted that quite severely. You know, so some of our very large customers, and it's when I talk to all other valve manufacturers or other equipment manufacturers telling me the same. I mean, a lot of those companies, whether it be here in the US or whether in the Middle East, they've cut their CapEx by 60%. Mm-hmm. So this means this year, 2021, and probably part of 2022, is going to be a very tough year. Yeah. There won't be much build. What we are seeing as a result, what people are doing is they're coming back to us with, say, a valve they've had from us for 20 or 30 years and saying, mm-hmm. it still works, but we'd like you to refurbish it. So we're seeing a lot of refurbishment going on. And it's a blessing in disguise that our valves last so long. I wish they would break a little bit earlier so we could sell more. But that's just the reality of the situation. So the petrochemical industry, I think, has got a fantastic future. There's no doubt about it. This is just a small bump on the road. We're going to see, you know, companies like Chevron, Phillips, like Exxon again. We think we're going to see a massive boom in the petrochemical industry in perhaps 3 to 4 years. And a lot of it's to do with the fact of the growth of Asia as an economy. They need the chemicals for their building materials, for their cables, for their plastics, for their companies, for their building of houses and so on. So that growth in Asia is going to really help us a lot. Yeah. There is, We have seen recently some trends, and particularly because of the cheaper feedstocks here down in Louisiana, some good, for example, PVC projects coming back to the US. And for us, that was, you know, a great shout out, you know, because it's fantastic to see jobs being created here. Right. Yes, we can make those things. We can do them here in the US as cheaply and as probably more efficiently than anywhere else in the world. We still have that ability here in the US. So it's a very positive outlook, but the next 2 to 3 years are going to be extremely tough.
Let's talk a little bit more about Asia. So you mentioned earlier in the interview that, you know, there was this demand for these high quality valves and that they're, you know, they're pretty much where we were at in the 70s or so. Let's expand on that a little bit more, because I think a lot of the viewers and myself included, I mean, we see a lot of growth that's going to be coming from these countries. Yeah. I mean, tell us a little bit more about Fedorov Corporation and really your involvement and what that looks like.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's very interesting to me, for example, is that 90% of the companies in China producing polyvinyl chloride, which is basically goes into siding of houses, a lot of it used in the building industry, are using our valves. And they're using them because, you know, they don't have the breakdowns, they get a continuous flow, and they know they're going to have that valve in 20 years' time. Mm. So what's fascinating for me, though, is they're not exporting any PVC. And this is what shows you about the centralized planning of the Chinese economy. The reason they're not exporting it, they're actually trying to expand and build all of these factories for their own country so that then, and particularly polymers, for example, mm-hmm. so that they can dominate in the clothing industry, which is a lot of it's polyester. So they can dominate in the bottles industry. So they can dominate in the cable company thing. Mm-hmm. So it's from an exporting company, it's fantastic. You can sell your very high quality valves into that economy. Mm-hmm. But of course, what it's signaling to me is that we're giving away a little bit of our other industries mm-hmm. that where we were strong in the past, because the same support isn't there, the same centralized strategic planning is not there as there is in China. But I mean, Asia in general, it's not just there. For example, we're seeing certain economies like Singapore is focused on a pharmaceutical industry, and they've really built an incredible pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
We're quite happy with that. We sell some pharmaceutical type valves as well. So where in the past, if you were a valve company, any type of valve company, you know, you really could do most of what you want to do here in the US. Mm-hmm. But really, if you want to keep manufacturing in the US, and it's important because they're real jobs, mm-hmm. You're really going to have to go where those companies are going. So, for example, you know, Dow's and DuPont's, when they're building a new company, it's more likely to be in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, for example, the Sadara project, or it's more likely to be perhaps in Singapore, potentially in Ireland. So you've really got to follow that, and it's important for us nationally as a government, as a country, but also as a company if you're in that manufacturing sector. And that's going to continue, by the way, Adam. I think you're definitely going to see that happening more and more and more.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I agree with that also. Let's talk specifically about the valve industry and what kind of trends you're seeing there and what you think this is going to look like going forward. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, and again, not telling you to have your crystal ball, but, you know, 20 years down the line, like, where do you see us going with the valve industry? Because one thing I will say I like is every time we bring up an example, you're like, wait a minute, we sell some valves over there. Where don't you sell valves? No, don't answer that question.
Adam, I have a crystal ball around here somewhere. But,
So where do you see us in, you know, 20 years? Like, give us some of that insight.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, I'm very optimistic. Well, I probably won't be working myself in 20 years' time. But anyhow, I would foresee that we will be working 3 or 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. And the reason I can say that with such certainty is that we do see a lot of modernization in a very old industry. So, for example, the moment we have about 50% of our company are engineers. And we do that because we're a specialist, right? But even in our engineering departments, we're using something called parametric design, for example. Now, parametric design is where we spend a lot of time up front inputting various design parameters into an algorithm so that when the designer goes there, a lot of the base drawing work that he used to have to do is done automatically by the machine. Mm-hmm. So that's work we're putting in today is going to help us in 3 or 4 years' time. And our approach has been, yeah, because people then say, well, oh, does that mean you're going to have less engineers? And our approach is not really. That's going to help us to standardize certain things, but we hope to grow. So here's an old industry hoping to grow in the future. We've already seen the CAD/CAM to machine. Mm-hmm. So we're at the moment, for example, we're a little bit late in that, but we're now, you know, a designer will design a valve on his PC, will be sent to a second PC where it'll be changed into machine code and that'll be sent directly out to the machine. We can't do it on all of our machines right now, but in 15, 20 years, there's probably going to be less people standing at the machine. That's for sure, too. So for us and certainly in our industry, particularly when you're dealing with, you know, these very, very prestigious companies, you know, who have very high quality standards, like Chevron, Phillips or Dow, as I was mentioning earlier, quality is essential for them.
Yeah.
And quality, what it means is that they get a product that works to their application, mm-hmm. that operates for as long as possible without having to be stopped in order to be maintained. And lasts for 20, 30, or 40 years. But in order to create that quality, and I have to say we have a very high, you know, percentage of where very few mistakes get outside our company. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you we make lots of mistakes. Yeah. And the difference importance about quality is that you catch all of the mistakes before the product leaves the factory gates. Mm. So those quality aspects are supported today by intensive training, you know, by the IT systems. We have such an investment in IT right now. It's hard to, where in the past, a big focus on ours was new machines, which is still important, but now it's new machines. And, you know, 30% of our CapEx budget is going into IT. Wow. So we're connected across the world to all of our other Schuff Group enterprises across the world. Everything is data mirrored. Everything, you know, it's nothing like the industry was even 5 years ago. So if you're looking forward, you're going to see a lot of standardization on the one hand, mm-hmm. which will reduce the number of hours required to work for sure. But on the other hand, giving you the opportunity to innovate more and bring out new products and so on as we move forward. It's a brave new world. And, you know, I think the key part in all of that, you know, we're still going to need very clever people to have these products because the problems don't go away. You can't just standardize everything. Adam, I think I've taken you on a very strange
tour
and, there.
And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? With every bit of advancement we have like three more complications. We do progress though. I mean, as a society and everything else, but just 30% IT, as you just mentioned a minute ago, that's a lot of additional seats. That's a lot of different work to keep that, you know, to keep everything going. And the complexity increases. And with the complexity increasing, like you said, there's not people just standing around, put it that way. There's just going to be more opportunity, in my opinion.
Yes, and I agree. I mean, I really hope we can get to a point where people can work 3 to 4 days a week and still get their full salary, of course. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's, I think, is going to be the companies of the future who are willing to let go from you've got to work 40 hours. It's going to be, how can you use the technology and your own intelligence to be able to achieve what you want to achieve and only have to work 30 hours a week? At least I hope that people are starting to think about this because it's coming very fast, you know? Awesome. And by the way, maybe put another plug in here for the manufacturing industry in the US, because yeah. It's so important, you know? There's great salaries for young people here who start here. You know, a machinist can earn between $20 and $40 an hour. And it's incredibly difficult to find young people who want to do that. I know, you know, learning how to operate a machine and perhaps standing by a machine is not very, very, very exciting. But it pays well. It's a great job. And a lot of companies, a lot of demand out there. So if there are young people watching, you know, consider, you know, machining, milling, welding as a career. Because it pays well and companies will really want you and appreciate you. I don't consider my machinists to be machinists. I consider them to be workmen, mm-hmm. craftsmen of the highest level. Mm-hmm. I've seen this happen.
So Schwimma, it's an organization out of Wisconsin, and they have a whole program around engaging youth in their in school, starting as early as middle school. And they're particular in the different metals industry. So like big metals, like shooting metals. lot of different metals industries. And the thing is that, you know, the bottom line is manufacturing is in its own form of renaissance right now. And there is a lot of opportunity in this thought process. And I'm not saying I'm for college, against college. I mean, I'm not saying any of these things matter. Yes. All I'm saying is that there's opportunity out there. And that if somebody wants to, you know, graduate high school and want to go into the trades, there's a lot of opportunity. And the normal college path of being maybe saddled with debt and coming out with a communications degree and no job and spending the first 10 to 15 years, you know, working off that debt and figuring things out. I mean, that's not the only path, even though that's what's been, in my opinion, trumpeted for at least the last 10, 15 years. And with, you know, education, inflation increasing 6% with salaries not, you know, being commensurate to that, you got to kind of ask at one point, like, hey, where do you want to be? And if somebody wants to go to college and that's your thing, they know what they want to do. Great. Amazing. Do it. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Great. Do it. But if you have no idea, like, there's other things you can do. Like, you don't have to go and take on $100,000 of debt to figure out if this is something you want to do. Like, you can make money now. And the thing is even the manufacturing process in general, I feel like could be Hollywood, it could be who knows, but you know, once upon a time we thought of like manufacturing and manufacturers, they're like these dingy places or these like not so nice places because of what we've seen in maybe movies. But some of these like factories you see, they're clean, they have robotics everywhere. I mean, they're very high-tech factories, like you said, like the machinists, like it's different, like they're high quality, like they're craftsmen. Yes. They are. So I think the industry overall maybe hasn't had its rebranding properly yet, because it's really changed over the last, you know, 20 years or so.
And Adam, this is something that Germany does very well. Our parent company Schuff is 125 years old. It's a German company, very innovative, and they make beautiful valves. I mean, it's like Swiss clockwork valves. We make, you know, similar high quality, but I mean, it's something special when it comes from Germany. But what some huge advantage that, you know, those companies have in Germany is that they have special educational opportunities for people who say at age 16, you know what, no, I'm not the one for the university degree that you were talking about. They say, I prefer to do a profession. And they take these people at age 16 and say, okay, good, we'll train you to be a specialist in welding. And they do an internship, if you like, for 4 years. And after the 4 years, they're age 20, they come out, they're fully qualified, they're considered a master of that trade.
Wow.
And in Germany, it's done religiously. I mean, companies are working together with government departments, working together with the institutes, and, you know, it's all self-funding. The industry is giving these young people great opportunities and jobs. It's a wonderful system that we should perhaps, you know, I always say, look at what other people are doing. You know, you don't have to copy it, but do it and do it better. And why not? It's great for our young people. It's great for the manufacturing industry. But you're right. There's great opportunities in this industry still. I mean, there has been a lot of consolidation, I have to say. If we looked at this, the valve industry, perhaps 10 years ago, there might have been, you know, 200 or 300% more companies than there are today. So a lot of private equity has moved in. A lot of big companies taken over other companies. So that's a big change as well, you know. But I think there's always room for that special company who's fleet of foot, can move into special applications, and also is willing to sell nationally and internationally.
Awesome.
So, and for young people, and by the way, working for a company that's international is fascinating, right? I mean, we used to have a program here for young engineers that come in. So they do a year or two in project engineering. They don't really like that because they all want to be design engineers, right? And I understand that. It's, you know, you're young, you think, but designing engineering is very tough. So we put them into design engineering for 2 years, and they get through that process and say, okay, we'll give you a year of abroad. And, you know, in many cases with some of our people who go through the program, some of them say at the end, well, I don't have a passport yet. And I think, but they love it. Then they go abroad. It's challenging. It stretches the mind. It stretches your knowledge of the world. And they all come back, change people, and they grow through the process. I think because people are, you know, probably one of the most important parts, and developing the people. I mean, I think you were asked earlier, you know, the important, what are the key things that a CEO should know and learn, you know? And when I meet with other CEOs, the joke is, you know, I'm part horse trader, part diplomat, part strategist, and that's true. It's a very diverse job. But the most difficult part is continually motivating. And of course, you can only motivate if you have a clear strategy and if you've broken that strategy down to clear goals and objectives. But realizing that when you talk to the group of engineers, you need a slightly different tone than when you talk to the group on the workshop floor or you talk to the people in the office and so on. So that skill, no matter what changes in the next 20 years, I think that people skills, emotional, you know, IQ, I call it what you will, is going to be critical for our companies here in the US.
Man, well said, Roderick. And I have to say, you know, this has been great. You know, getting your insight, not just on manufacturing, of course, what's going on and everything you're doing at the Fedorov Corporation and what's going on in China. I mean, we covered international practices, doing business abroad. I mean, we covered a lot of this. This is great. We covered manufacturing, what's going on in the United States. And we covered a lot on this. So maybe to close it off, Roderick, if somebody's listening to this and they want to learn more about the Fedorov Corporation, which is a member of the Schuff Group. I mean, what's the best way for them to learn more?
Well, just to say, as a plug for the company going forward, I mean, if there's anybody out there, whether they're in the petrochemical oil industry and they're having difficulty finding a valve to match their application, we really take pleasure in trying to solve those unsolvable problems. It's part of our raison d'etre. And you know, you can contact us. The best way is probably just go onto our website, www.fedorovvalves.com, or to our parent company's website, www.schuff.com, or you can call us here. It's at 610-584-1500. We're always there. We'd love to talk to you. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you as well, Adam, today.
Awesome. Thank you, Roderick. And to the audience, as always, thank you for tuning in. I hope you got a lot of value out of this. If you did, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. Definitely love for you to be a return listener or a viewer. I have a lot more great guests just like Roderick coming up. So definitely make sure you don't want to miss out on that. And Roderick, thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. My pleasure.